And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast. It's Friday. It's December 1st. Our house elf, Cuddle, arrived on schedule. And Bobby Marks, December 1st means we're 2 weeks away from when a large portion of free agents who signed over the summer can be traded. Trade season is underway, informally. We are about 25% of the way through the NBA season, so you can dispense with the, well, we don't know what our team is. We got to figure it out. We're starting to figure a lot of stuff out. And I thought this was a good excuse to bounce around the league, look at the trade market, but also look at how some of these teams are playing. Dig in to the X's and O's a little bit. And sort of, you know, all of the focus has been on the Bulls. And I think one of the more interesting sort of broader questions is, well, who else other than the Bulls veterans, centered around Zach LaVine, who they announced today is going to be out for a week, who else that might surprise us might become gettable realistically at the deadline for a win-now team? And of course, the Bulls, because they defy all logic at all times, win over the Bucks without Zach LaVine, without DeMar DeRozan, in overtime, in a game in which the Bucks, I feel like a crazy person, Bobby. Every day I check, every day I sigh, and every day I say the same thing in some media outlet or some media form of media. 11 Giannis, Dame Giannis pick and rolls last night. 11. Just not enough. I don't understand what's happening. Don't get it. But let's bounce around the league. First of all, how are you, Bobby? Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. We both have, if you're watching this on YouTube, we've got green on. You've got your Dartmouth, and I've got my Newman Celtics, which is the high school my kids go to. A quick funny story for you.
Better be funny, Bobby, because you're hijacking it right off the top. Better be funny.
Quick funny story. My younger son plays JV basketball. I'm at the game, first game of the year. I'm sitting in the stands. Athletic director comes over to me and goes, "Mr. Marks, do you mind doing the scorebook tonight for the game?" Sure. Zach, I was as nervous doing that thing than going on live TV. There was so much going on. There was like rebounds, assists, turnovers, timeouts. I said to the kid, who made that foul? Wasn't he supposed to be shooting two free throws? I said to my wife after the game, I feel like I went through a full sweat of like a Nets game. I was so nervous doing this thing.
It's a big responsibility. Was there an electronic scoreboard that you had to operate?
There was,
to?
Yes. There was somebody doing the electronic scoreboard.
Oh, someone else was doing that. Because that's the one where you mess that thing up. There's a clock error. Like the whole game pauses. Everyone's mad at you because everyone really just wants the game to be over. I mean, let's be honest. Like everyone just wants the game to be done. Okay. Bobby, I said, let's pick some teams we want to talk about both for trade purposes and basketball purposes. And I said, I'll let you lead. So pick the first team you want to hit.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we'll go with Golden State, right? I mean, I think that's going to be the team to talk about. Certainly 9-10, eighth place, kind of in the middle. You know, I think 14th offensive efficiency, 17th defensive. Good win Thursday night against the Clippers. I don't want to say, I guess, can we call it meltdown against Sacramento in the in-season tournament?
Put it in the microwave and melted all the way down to its primal elements.
Because there was a point of me, Zach, during the game, and I actually said this to my wife. I said, when they were up, 72-48, I said, this is why you can't count this team out, right? Like a win now type mentality, right? Like they're playing for something, you know, whether it be, you know, that's the in-season tournament to try to get in. Getting into the playoffs in a seven game series, like this is why you can't count this team out. And then all of a sudden things go off the rails here. And I think Golden State is going to be certainly the focus just because there's so many different questions, not just what's on the court, but whether it be Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, who's been out and who's has actually played a little bit better. Chris Paul, Mike Dunleavy, first year as the general manager here. Is he willing to kind of be an active trade participant? Something that Bob Myers, except for last year with the Gary Payton trade and the James Wiseman trade, really was not, really didn't have to be, wasn't active during, the stat, like they didn't make a trade for like 10 years during the regular season. which is pretty remarkable here. But I think Golden State is, I think Golden State's going to be, you know, the team we should start with, just because there's so many lingering questions. Like, yeah, I watched the Klay Thompson press conference the other night when he said, you know, what do you want me to do, bench myself? And I just feel like there's like the weight of the world right now on his shoulders, right? Not shooting great in the last year of his contract. Kendra Andrews wrote about how that's kind of weighing on him as far as, you know, this expiring deal, no deal in place here. You know, what do you do, right? What do you do with Klay? There is that second longest tenured member on the roster, four-time NBA champion. There's that, you know, he's part of one of our own, but then you're also looking big picture down the road.
So, I love that you started with the Warriors, because I've had four executives from other teams in the last 72 hours ask me, just in spitballing stuff, would they ever trade Klay Thompson? And the reason they're asking is because teams see somewhat of an opportunity there in terms of, well, can we get involved in a deal? Would they have to attach an asset to trade Klay Thompson if they want to get like meaningful win now talent with multiple years left on their contract in exchange for Klay Thompson? And this is where I just want to step back for a second. Number one, I think the Warriors' true level as a team is much closer to their 6-2 start than it is to their 3-8 or whatever they are since then, which has included a spiral from Klay Thompson, which he's starting to get out of a little bit. Lethargic play from Andrew Wiggins, which he had started to extricate himself from. He's getting rebounds, doing all the Andrew Wiggins stuff that I care about, before he apparently slammed his index finger in a car door, which, if you haven't done that, is no effing joke. That hurts. So he's out for, he missed last night's game. I don't know how long he's going to be out. And Draymond was, of course, suspended for 5 of those games and ejected from 2 others. So, like, can you just be on the court, man? I know you're an all-time great player, a genius, and all this. We all have to caveat it, but, like, can you just be on the court?
Towards the end of that Sacramento game, was trending towards another one there. Like,
yeah. Can you just, like, fulfill the minimum requirement of the job, which is, like, play the games? And if they, all of that settles, and of course now Chris Paul's hurt and Gary Payton's hurt, I think this is still a very good team. Like, I think that 6-2 start is closer to their true level. The turnovers are just absolutely baffling. Like even by Warrior standards, including the 2 at the end of that game against Sacramento, are like, how is this? Like, what's going on here? So inside baseball, I'm in LA a couple weeks ago. Klay's just one bad game after another. And Perk, in our pre-production meeting for NBA Today, just unleashes, you were a part of this indirectly, unleashes, like, I'm just going to say it, they need to trade Klay Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about it, and I tell the producers, look, it's very easy for us to go on TV and be like, this guy stinks, trade that guy, trade this guy. You're talking about a living legend on a $43 million expiring contract who is not playing well. I think it is our responsibility, if we're just going to throw this idea into the air, to actually have a discussion about, like, what's a realistic trade for Klay Thompson? And even the emotional elements of doing it. To be clear, the Warriors do not want to trade Klay Thompson. They have no desire to do it. I would bet heavily against it ever happening. I don't think he's a sacred cow. I think there's only one of those on the team, and it's 30. But it's not a bridge they want to get to. And so we said, okay, let's have a discussion on TV. The initial reaction from Perk was, well, that's not my job. I'm not a GM. I'm not Bobby Marks. I said, well, let's call Bobby Marks. He works for us. And we go on TV, and Perk proceeds, and I love Perk, but he proceeds to tell the world how bad Klay Thompson's playing. And I say, okay, let's hear some trades. Expiring contract, $40 million. I said, okay, with the Sixers trade Tobias Harris and a pick for him. And I'm like, and then he's like, RJ Barrett and a pick. I'm like, so Perk, you just talked about how bad this dude's playing. And now you're pitching these deals where other teams with guys who are playing well are trading those guys and assets for Klay Thompson. Like, none of this makes any sense. And I said, the only realistic Klay Thompson trades to me are Klay Thompson plus an asset, whether it's a pick or Kuminga, who's just been so up and down that I don't know what to make of him, for a good player on a long-term contract, a multi-year contract that would help the Warriors today and tomorrow, because between trading Klay, trading Poole, and the potential to get off Chris Paul's contract, they can absorb, if they want to, another long-term salary, as long as it's not like a mega max. And you try to look at that model of deal, you can look over at Toronto, which is in an interesting spot, and we'll talk about them hovering around 500. Night to night, sometimes I really like how the Raptors are playing, and then the next night I'm like, this is the most lifeless, directionless offense in the entire NBA. But some nights it looks good, like they beat Phoenix the other night. I thought they played pretty well. Talk about Scottie Barnes and how they used him in that game later. You can aim at the Bulls, but like Zach LaVine's not a Warriors player. Like even if that were a realistic thing, and again, I don't think it is, like he's not a the way he plays is totally antithetical to how the Warriors play. I just think this team is going to have to settle in and be just a good team. And I think they will be aggressive looking at ways to upgrade the team if they're not playing up to their standards. Because they internally are like, Steph Curry can still be the number one guy in a title team. And as long as that's true, we're going for it. There's no other alternative. I just don't know what the vehicle of going for it looks like right now. But I think this team is still good. I want to see more Moses Moody. I'm with Perk on that. And in fact, the lineup that in particular I want to see is Curry, Klay, Wiggins, Moody, Draymond. And Pajemski is entering the discussion as a wild card, just throwing up these jump hooks and getting rebounds and making shots. But I would pump the brakes on the Klay talk, and that's what I've told these executives who's asked me, because I just don't think they have the will to really do it. I think Klay, and then the question that I pose to them is like, what if Klay shoots 42% from three for the rest of the season? How much does that just correct everything that's going on with him? And their response has generally been, that probably corrects like 70% of it. It doesn't make him faster on defense as fast as he used to be. It doesn't do all that. I don't know. I still think this team is pretty good. It's pretty good to very good. Can they get out of the West? Can they get to the conference finals? That's just a high bar. I just don't know what they're supposed to do. What are you looking at?
Well, I think you hit it on the head with Moody too. And I understand Steve Kerr's logic in that Sacramento game, but Moody got it going and he took him out, right?
I didn't understand. What was the logic? I didn't understand.
I didn't get that part. Because then I think they were up five when they took him out. And then it, you know, we know what happened there. That makes him, if I'm, you know, if teams are calling about Moses Moody and I got Klay Thompson on an expiry, I'm like, wait a minute, like this guy might be our, you know, he's part of the core. And Steve Kerr last night after the game said regarding Podzinski, like, I'm going to have to look for minutes for him at the end of the game here, right? Like, he kind of has this knack about him.
Well, with Wiggins out last night, they played a version of the lineup I'm talking about with both Pajemski and Moody, Steph, Klay, Draymond. Like, they're starving for a Draymond at center lineup that is not too small and doesn't have two non-shooters in it, with one being Draymond. Both of those variants could work, and I want to see more of it. More.
Yeah, I think that the, you know, outside of, you know, certainly Klay, and I agree with you. I mean, I think that's kind of a, unless really things go off the tracks, right? Like things like really head south. I think Chris Paul for me is probably the most interesting thing, because how do they view Chris Paul? Do they view Chris Paul on an as he has got another year left? It's a non-guarantee. There's a trigger date in there for next year. Do they view him as an expiring contract? Because the reality of it is that, you know, if the goal is to bring back Klay Thompson, or the goal is to have flexibility here, that Chris Paul is not going to be on the roster next year. That's how I look at it here. And you get past the trade deadline here, unless you're going to guarantee some of that or all of it and then try to trade him during the offseason here, you know, he's technically on the last year of his contract. That's probably my big, you know, if I'm asking questions and I've got a bunch in front of me, that's, you know, the Chris Paul factor for me is the one there.
And I think he's been good for them, although his shooting has not been. Clearly they need someone who will just not throw the ball all over the place, and that's Chris Paul. Stylistically, I think the fit has been okay. Like when he plays with the starters, he revs it up a little bit. He'll throw hit-ahead passes. He'll run the wing. He'll set the random pin-in screens that are the Warriors' trademark. He'll do all that stuff. And when it's with him and the bench guys, it's more of like Chris Paul ball. It doesn't always look great. in part because Saric, who's been outstanding for them, is not like a roller like Chris needs or wants. I wish they would use Kuminga in that specific role more. Like last night, he had a couple of baskets rolling to the rim with Saric spacing. Chris didn't play last night, obviously. I like that look. I think Chris has been okay, but I totally agree with you. If I'm looking for a contract plus pick or whatever for player X trade that helps us win, I'm looking more at CP than I am at Clay for just lots of reasons. Size, history, emotional elements, and just I do think Clay could shoot 42% from three for the rest of the season. Like, that's on the table.
No, I mean, that's, I mean, it's a, I mean, great point. I mean, the one question that I have on here is that, you know, is this roster good enough? And it's almost kind of what Toronto did with Kawhi, but that was during the offseason back in 2019. Is the roster good enough to be pushed over the top by a one-year star rental, right? Like, I don't know who that star, like, I don't know who that is right now. Similar to what Toronto did with Chris Paul, because when you look at it, they still have, they owe a pick to Portland in 24 that's protected. That likely will probably be conveyed. So you can trade if you had to 26, 28, 30.
You're talking about the Warriors. The Warriors, went Memphis to Boston, Boston to Portland.
Yeah, to Portland. You know, to add that one player, and then who's the one player going out? And I think, you know, listen, if there's a $33 million player that becomes available and you have to attach Chris Paul and whatever draft picks to that, I just don't know who that is right now. I think it's still kind of, you know, I'm not talking about the guys in, you know, the guys in Chicago, because as you said, like Zach LaVine doesn't fit with this, and I don't see.
Caruso does, and the league doesn't really know what to do with Caruso.
Well, and that's one of the, I mean, we'll get to Chicago, but that's one of my questions I have for Chicago. What happens if a trade presents itself where there's, you know, one really good first round pick involved? That's pretty rich for Caruso, but what happens with one really good and maybe something else?
It's funny you're saying the one versus two, because that's the exact conversation I've had with people in the last week. Is, and I haven't talked to the Bulls about it. I'm in the kind of a leave the Bulls alone stage.
I am
right
too
now.
I have to always like condition myself, because I have been there before. Like, when things are going south, like, I don't want to be the guy who piles on. Like, we all see it, right? Like, we all see what's going on. They had 30 assists last night without LaVine or DeRozan on the court, like season high against Milwaukee, right? Ball moved better. Is it sustainable? No. I mean, come on. It's not sustainable in that.
I'm honestly shocked they won the game last night, because if you've watched their recent game, let's just do the Bulls now related to all these other teams. If you watch some of their recent games, I mean, if I racked my brain and actually did the research, I could find a team like this, but I don't remember the last time a team that, whatever you thought of it, conceived of itself as a competitive team before the season, hit a stage this fast where it was so clearly hopeless and broken and had no card to play for the foreseeable future. And by that, I mean, all the reporting out of Chicago has been Billy Donovan is safe. They recently extended him. And that's the card all these teams play first. It's like, oh, okay, let's just fire the coach and see if we can get the dead cat bounce from firing the coach. They don't appear to want to do that. Again, I have no original reporting on that. I've heard murmurs of the same thing, but I don't know how credible it is. But Billy Donovan's the coach of the team today, and they've been hopeless and broken for a while now. December 15th is still 2 weeks away. January 15th, when some of the Lakers players become tradable, and that's a Zach LaVine theoretical fit that everyone's obsessed with. I don't know that the Lakers are as obsessed with it as everybody else is, but be that as it may, that's 6 weeks away. Like, you just can't, I don't remember a team just rolling out there like, all right, here's another hopeless loss, another hopeless loss, another hopeless loss. And like, to mention on LaVine, the next time he plays, and he's out a week now, I think the Bulls said today, watch him off the ball. He is just lifeless off the ball. If you wanna understand why people are like, is Zach LaVine listless right now? Watch him off the ball. There was a play in the Nets game the other night, which they lost, and the Nets, I think, set their home franchise record for most threes in a game.
25, yeah.
where someone went to set a pin down for Zach LaVine in the left corner, and it was a half-hearted pin down. Pin down might be generous. It was kind of like, we're strolling in the same area. Would you like to use me as a barrier? And Zach LaVine just like stood in the left corner, like he might as well have, he just wanted to go to the bathroom somewhere off the court, like just walk off the court. I don't know why we're talking about the Bulls. Oh, the Bulls, the Warriors. I mean, Toronto's the other place to look for these kinds of players, like right on like, although they're mostly on expirings.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk Toronto. Or we want to continue with Chicago. What do you want to do?
On Caruso.
Yeah, so we started with Caruso.
So that's the question. People are like, do they really want two firsts for Caruso? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I would ask for it. I don't think they're going to get two firsts, and so you come back to this one first. But what I mean by the league doesn't know what to make of him is he only makes about $10 million. Mm-hmm. I say only in relative NBA terms. Is he going to – do you – when you're thinking about him as a trade piece and a missing piece for a lot of these teams, whether it's Philly, Golden State, any team, every team could use Alex Caruso.
Yeah. I mean, I heard you with Doris earlier in the week, and I know that's been floating around, like Milwaukee. We've heard someone said on, I don't know if maybe Perk said on NBA Day, Milwaukee, like, I don't see Milwaukee, right? Like you said it, like they've given up everything. What's
left? They
have
nothing left to trade. But do I view Caruso as a standalone? Is he attached to one of these other bigger salary players? If so, how is that bundle valued? It's difficult, but that's the Caruso conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I think with him, like I've said all along, I thought out of the three players, he probably commands the most trade value. He's got the most trade value out of DeRozan, who's on an expiring, and LaVine has got $170 million left. And I think with Chicago is like, you're going to have to vent your schedule in the next, you know, and they're fortunate to get a Milwaukee win on Thursday night, where Lillard was bad. Like, I mean, I'll call it out. Like, Damian Lillard was not good in that game, especially down the stretch with a season high seven turnovers in that game. But your schedule coming up is brutal. I mean, I thought they had a chance of losing another nine in a row based off that. I think at Miami twice, and you got, I think, Boston in there somewhere. And so your schedule is going to force you to pick a direction. Like, rebuilding is not easy. It's not like just collecting draft picks. And, you know, we've seen teams for the last 4 or 5 years just stuck winning 20, 25 games here. But can you try to do something like what maybe Indiana did few years ago, where you're parlaying a player into two players? Maybe you're not going the draft pick route. I don't know if that's going to be realistic, because Indiana was fortunate that Sacramento was a willing participant to swap Haliburton for and Hield for Sabonis. Like, there's not many of those deals out there, at least right now here. So I just think for Chicago, like, we've seen I looked up this one stat, Zach. It's pretty interesting. Since March of 2022, they have not won more than four games in a row.
That's a lot of games.
Yeah.
Four games.
I mean, they have not strung along a streak of winning games here. So why, you know, what's the realistic thought that things were going to change? And it's not going to.
I'm going to veer us on a detour for just a couple of minutes, because streaks and nine game losing streaks. You mentioned not, so someone had lost. You thought they were going to lose. The Bulls were going to lose nine in a row. The Pistons have lost 16 games in a row.
A competitive one in New York, though.
Great. Great. Fantastic. The Washington Toilet Bowl on Monday was a big moment for both teams, and the Wizards blew them out. They're 2-17. Here are their next, I don't know, whatever amount of games it is. Home against Cleveland, who is just a puzzle that is a little funky right now, but, you know, should beat the Pistons. Home against Memphis, shaping up to be a big, big game for the Pistons, because after that, at Orlando, tough place to win. Home against the Pacers, who score 140 every game, win or lose. Philly, Milwaukee, Atlanta. Like, we could get to, if you don't win that Memphis game, this could be like a, what did I say it was? This could be like a 23 game losing streak real fast. And I don't even know what you mentioned despair and having lived despair. I haven't even thought much about the Pistons and what they should do because I don't even know what they should do. Like, obviously, they should trade Bogdanovich and all these veterans to get more assets. That just increases your pain now. And this pain tolerance is getting, like, it's getting pretty intolerable. But on the other hand, like, I don't really have an appetite to trade Jaden Ivey or Jalen Duren or any of these young players as scattershot as they have been because Jalen Duren's 19. Jaden Ivey, I just don't understand what Monty Williams is doing. Like, all of a sudden, he's the 11th guy. He was starting. Well,
even,
now he's
even last night against or Thursday night against New York, you know, he went Monty went like 10 deep in the first quarter, right? And Ivey wasn't one of them. Asar Thompson came off the bench. Isaiah,
what did
Asar
Thompson do to deserve that? Is he too good as a rookie? Like, I know he can't shoot. No one on the team can shoot. And by the way, I don't want to hear this. Like, I like Isaiah Stewart as a player. If you're going to cite to me that this Isaiah Stewart Durin or Isaiah Stewart as a four experiment has legs by, and you're going to cite his 3-point percentage, which has been good all season, great. It's not evidence that the thing works because A, he doesn't shoot enough, and B, being a stretch four or whatever is not just about shooting. It's about playmaking off the dribble and passing, and he just can't do that at a level that he's averaging like one assist a game or so. Anyway, what are you even supposed to do if you're the Pistons? Do you just like ride it out and take your medicine? How much medicine can you take before the patient dies?
You're almost going to have to because they tried to go the cap space direction in 2021 when they went like Jeremy Grant and Plumlee. And
I'm glad you brought up Jeremy Grant because I was having coffee with somebody 2 days ago and I said, what was the point of the whole Jeremy Grant experience? I understand they got a first round pick for him. I believe it's a Bucks first round pick. So it's not that great in the end. I think I'd have to look it up and verify it as we're talking here. Like, they got a good year out of Jeremy Grant, and then they got an okay second year, and then they traded him for one pick. They used cap space on him. They paid him a lot of money, enough that Denver actually offered about the same, and he walked anyway. It's not like he helped your young players develop. It's not like he helped you win any meaningful amount of games, and it's not like you flipped him for, like, a crazy good return. Like, I just don't understand what the point of the entire thing was other than Troy Weaver and Jeremy Grant go way back.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, and I remember reading Troy's comments from there as far as like, we need established veterans to, you know, have good habits around our young players. We need to start, you know, playing meaningful games. And there was a little bit of a stretch. I think it was Cade's rookie year, I want to say, after the All-Star break where they were, they didn't get blown out. They were competitive. They hung in games here. I think what Detroit was, you go into this season, you kick the can on cap space, you went out and got Joe Harris and Monty Morris in trades, right? Two veterans. You already had Bogdanovic. You have your young group here. Bogdanovic gets hurt. Joe Harris is, you know, I mean, come on. He's
I literally forgot Joe Harris is on the team until you just said.
Since since the Milwaukee series in 22 or 21, you know, like he hasn't, I mean, he's been hurt. Monty Morris has been hurt. I mean, it's like a college all-star team that's out there. And I don't know and you've got a veteran head coach. And that's the thing. Like, I don't know. Like, I think Monty Williams is a good coach, but I don't know if he fits with this group of, you know, this young group of players here. Like, you almost wanted someone who was a young assistant somewhere where you're all development here, but I don't know how Detroit's going to get out of it. And you've got, as you said, there's so many young kids here you'll have cap space. And here's the other thing too, Zach, is like, it's not like they're Orlando or Oklahoma City or Utah, all these teams that have draft assets, equity, they don't. They owe a pick that's going to New York that's protected. I mean, they'll still have it, but it's not like they have each year two or three first round picks or a bunch of, you know, ton of seconds here. Like they're for the team that's the worst team in the NBA. There's no draft equity here.
Where's Seko Dumboya playing these days? Anyway,
I think he's in the G League.
Look, let me just defend him a little bit. The Cade missing all of last season essentially has set them back a year timetable wise. I don't know what to make of what's happening with Ivy. I thought he finished up his rookie year pretty well in terms of like showing the right kind of skill development and all that. I don't really understand what's going on now in terms of his minutes. I like Asar Thompson. They're just very young and their veterans have all been injured. And Cade is essentially a second year player rather than a third year player. So, but again, I don't know. I don't know what to do. I just know that anything rash, like to try to save this season or make it less painful, feels like the wrong move. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Okay, can I pick a team now?
Yeah.
The second most common question I get, or that comes up in these sort of conversations that are fun to have, is what are the Clippers going to do if they're just mediocre?
That's the questions.
Look, I'm not saying that they're going to be mediocre. In fact, I think they're 5-3 in their last eight games. You can throw those wins in the trash if you want to. They're two against the Spurs, one against the Rockets, who have not won a road game all year. That game was in LA, back-to-back, the Kings on a back-to-back. I think functionally, even last night in Golden State, when the Clippers were on a back-to-back, the process has looked a lot better in the last five or six games with Harden than it did in the first five, when they just looked like they had no interest in like moving without the ball or making quick decisions. The decisions have been much faster. Kawhi and PG are getting many more closeouts to attack and are now attacking them with quickness and vigor, which is the formula. There's a little bit more randomness to the way they play, and I mean that in a good way. Like, there was a play last night in Golden State where Harden was bringing the ball up, and PG on the right wing realized that nobody was guarding him. He was open, uncovered, and instead of just sort of standing there, he went up and set a screen for Harden, knowing no one's going to be on the other side of it. Harden went and took a three. There was another play in that game that made me really perk up, where Harden and Zoo ran a pick and roll, and Zoo's playing much better as a role man and as a passer out of the role when they trap Harden in the last week or so. Harden, Zoo run a pick and roll. At the same time, PG sets a cross screen under the rim for Kawhi to get a switch or whatever. So simultaneously, you have a good pick and roll and a post-up option with Kawhi happening at the same time. Neither bears any fruit. So what happens? They continue playing. PG comes around a pin down from Zoo. So Zoo sets a screen, rolls, and rolls into a pin down for Paul George, which becomes an instant Paul George Zoo pick and roll, kick to Terrence Mann, drives the closeout, misses a runner. Good process. Kawhi's the process is good. So I'm not going to say that the Clippers are trapped in mediocrity. I'm just saying this is a discussion that's happening around the league because they are 8-10. The Harden experience has been uneven, although it's getting better. They're starting five, by the way. Have you looked at the numbers for the starting five with Mann and Zubats?
Mm-hmm. I heard you say that on TV yesterday, on Wednesday.
Plus 68 in 148 minutes, which when did that happen? So I'm not willing to pigeonhole them into anything. Their point differential is actually quite good. I think they're trending the right way. People are asking this question because they're 8-10, because Paul George and Kawhi Leonard can be free agents this summer, because the Sixers are sitting there with max cap space this summer, because there have been no extensions for Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. The Clippers are kind of mum about it. CAA is kind of mum about it. They represent PG. You're never getting anything out of the Kawhi side. I can only deduce, Bobby, and this is really a leap of deduction, that the two sides have not found common ground on an extension because I believe Lawrence Frank has come out and said, we're talking. We always talk. We got each other's numbers. We text. We're on a text chain. Maybe we'll WhatsApp. We're talking. Everyone's phone works. Well, if you're talking and there's no deal and it's December and you've been eligible for deals for months and months now, I can only deduce that common ground has not been found. I don't have a good answer to this question because I don't know what the hell the Clippers can even do. Like, when people ask that question, what they really mean is, would they ever bail out and trade one of these guys and try to restock the cupboard? Now, one of these guys means Kawhi and PG because Russ doesn't have trade value and Harden doesn't have trade value. As we just saw, there was only one team trying to trade for Harden. We know the new arena's coming. We know both these guys, I think if they had their druthers, would prefer to be in LA. They chose LA. They're from Southern California. I think the most likely answer is nothing happens here and they just ride it out no matter what it is. But have you thought about this? Is there some creative angle I'm missing?
Yeah, I mean, I have this article coming out, and I think it's like 2 or 3 weeks from now, like my big front office questions for each team. And that's the one question that said, what's the comfort level on a new contract for Paul George and Kawhi Leonard? And two, if the team is below 500 at the deadline, does the front office gauge the market on either player?
Ooh.
That's because when you look at it, and for a team that has gone all in, right? But then you have to take the other thing, like, hey, we've got a new building in place. Can we go into this place, into a new building as
somebody's got to go to the bathroom on all the toilets, Bobby. They need people to use the toilets.
Can they go into a new building as a basically like a retooling, rebuilding roster here, considering your last two big trade assets are your 2031st and Terrence Mann, right? I mean, maybe you can, I don't know what the value of Norman Powell, who's got 3 years left on his contract, because that's really from a trade value standpoint, if there's another one more deal in place, it's Mann in 2030. I mean, that's the reality of it. Or are you just, because you've basically have gone all in with the Harden trade, I mean, all your draft equity is out the door. Do you just ride this out and hopefully it figures itself, you know? But that's like for me to start looking at what the value of Paul George and Kawhi is, that like, things really have to go south here, right? Like that's, you know, they're, as you said, they're 8-10, they're an 11th, 17th offensive efficiency, 7th in defense, 5-9 the last 14 have played better. Strung along some games here, but that would be the question internally. Like, I think you have to have that internally. And if it's no, we're fine, ride it out. We'll figure it out if we can get a deal done and maybe closer to June 30th, or we'll run the risk that both these guys could be free agents in July. That's just what we're gonna do.
I don't think they're going to be under 500 at the trade deadline. If they play with the juice that they've played with in the last 10 days, I think they'll at least break that barrier. Now, they internally feel an urgency to not just do that, but to get the hell out of the play-in, because the play-in is risk and they can't afford that level of risk. And I said this yesterday on NBA Today, like, we keep talking about the Lakers and the Clippers because we got to talk about them every goddamn day. And we keep saying things like, well, this team's going to be judged in April, May, and June. You know, we got to wait till April, May, and June to say what this team's about. I'm like, April, May, and June? The Lakers are in 7th. The Clippers are in 11th. Like, why are we sharpieing these teams into, like, well, we'll see what they play in the first round? Like, they got to earn that. Oklahoma City's not going anywhere. Denver, Minnesota, Phoenix is withstanding all these injuries. Sacramento's really good. Like, why are we gifting the LA teams April, May, and June status? How about they prove it in December, January, and February? On the Clippers, linked to all this is Kawhi in the last 5 games has looked more like Kawhi. And the whole thing is based on, even Ty Lue has said this, Kawhi being the best player on the team. Kawhi being, if not a top 5 level player anymore, which is what he was the last 40 games of last year and the first 2 games of the playoffs, a top 10 to 12-ish player. Didn't look anything like that for the first 12 games of the season. So looked more in that range of late. I like the Tice addition. I think Russ and Tice off the bench make some sense because Tice can shoot, and they've benched PJ Tucker of late, which I don't think that that necessarily makes super whether that's neither here nor there to me, but I think they're discovering we can't play two of Russ, Zubats, and Tucker together. Just can't have two of those guys on the floor. We don't have enough space. So I like the way they're trending. I just don't know what the answers to these questions are. Can I pick a team now?
Go ahead.
I want to talk about the Raptors.
Sure.
Because we've been talking about the Raptors trading people for 2 years, and they went out and acquired somebody in Jakob Poeltl at last year's deadline and left a lot of other teams scratching their heads. We know what the Raptors are. They're just an okay team. They're 9-10. Scottie Barnes has had a really nice bounce back year, but the overlap between Barnes, Anunoby, and Siakam and the way they want to play is still there. The lack of spacing is still there. And the team just kind of looks like an okay team. And I think they will look more than maybe any team that we're going to talk about. They're going to look at the next 20 games of as, okay, let's see like what we got. Like, can we get into the top six and be frisky? Or is this just kind of what we are? Like just a mediocrity that's going to struggle with this Brooklyn, Atlanta, whatever mess to get into the play-in. Hope Indiana falls back and Indiana's now only one game under. And we all know that Anunoby is a free agent, Siakam's a free agent, Trent is a free agent, all of whom have value around the league to varying degrees. And in this climate of the second apron and the new CBA, I think those expiring contracts have kicked up in value a little bit, and contracts like Levine's, for instance, have kicked down in value a little bit. And linked to Toronto and what can Toronto do and what's Toronto going to do, I'm going to do the thing people do at press conferences where they're like, I got three questions for you, Adam. Here, they're all unrelated. Let me get them all in. The Toronto thing, and just in thinking about the league, there's going to be a player who becomes available that we don't expect to become available right now. We know the Raptors guys are, if not available, potentially available just because it's common sense. I'm not reporting anything. They're expiring contracts, blah, blah, blah. We know the Bulls guys are potentially available. So talk about Toronto, and then that's the sub question. Like, who else are you looking at?
Yeah, I mean, you hit it right on the head. Like, does a play on the court warrant that Toronto can be more than a play-in team? Right? I don't right now. No, but I think the next, you know, whatever, 10 to 15 games here, and then like the big question was always like, Toronto has always been linked at the trade deadline. We saw it last year with OG and Siakam, and eventually they lost VanVleet to free agency. And I think a lot of that had to do with because of the extension rules, and they couldn't go out and extend him there. They were 26-30 at the deadline last year and added Jakob Poeltl. So what happens when you get to the deadline this year? Like, can you take that approach again where you're basically going to ride past without – if you're 500 or below 500 – couple games, let's say, can you run the risk of going past the deadline and then risking losing all three players in free agency for nothing? And for nothing means, yes, you will have $70 million in cap space, but listen, Toronto has never built the roster through free agency. That's not how they do it. They've drafted, they've traded, they've made trades. I love the city of Toronto, but it's not a hot destination for free agency. Like, that's just the reality of it here. Maybe that's changed here. But here's the other thing. So let's turn it the other way. Here's the question. If you're going to keep these guys, right? If you say, you know what, these are our guys, we'll figure this out in the offseason here. They've got $40 million in expiring contracts, not including those guys, with Trent, Thaddeus Young, Porter, Achiuwa, Malachi Flynn. They've got draft picks. They owe San Antonio draft pick. That's, I think, top six protected in 2024. So you've got, so similar when they were kind of poking around the Lillard stuff with Portland, right?
And by the way, that pick, just to stop you for a second, has been mentioned as a reason why, well, they will compete this whole year because they don't control their pick. So they don't have a reason to go to the bottom. I think they've reached the stage where it's kind of like, that's neither here nor there. The pick is not going to be super relevant to how we continue. But you're going somewhere interesting with these expiring.
Yeah, so the question is, can they upgrade the roster without moving Siakam or OG? Using all that other stuff, expirings, and whatever draft, you know, future draft picks they have. Like, so it's similar to like the mindset, you know, when, hey, with Damian Lillard's available, hey, can we get Damian Lillard without having to giving up any of our core guys, basically expirings and picks here? And I think that's the, so that you're look, so you're going from one thing, well, you know, we got to move Pascal or OG because, you know, they're going to be free agents. No, let's look at it the other way where, yeah, we want to keep these guys, but can we upgrade using the everything else?
That's an interesting question, because if you take Toronto out of the theoretical sellers category, we don't got too many of those with really high level players in their primes. Like, you can get a, you can get veterans who are on the downslope who could still help teams and all this, and we can name those guys if you want, but that would be interesting. On Toronto, they're 22nd in offense, 11th in defense. I'm just, this is what Pascal Siakam has shot on threes in the last four seasons, going backwards from starting with this season. 21%, 32%, 34%, 29.7%. It's just, it's looking like that's just kind of what it is. And the year, like his third year, he shot 37%. Like, okay, it's coming. It might not be coming. And that has other teams sort of wondering, okay, so he likes to sort of zigzag with the ball and, you know, hold, like not hold the ball, but he, you know, he's a ball dominant player. That's what, and part of the struggle this season for the Raptors is the team belongs to Scottie Barnes, and Dennis Schroeder has actually been very good for them and is a high usage ball handler. And it's left Siakam in some games kind of picking his spots and spotting up a lot. He's down to 20 a game from 24 last year, 23 the year before, but he's still, that's his game. Like, just spin and burrow in there. How does that fit if he's the number two or even number three guy on a team that has at least one guy who's going to have the ball all the time because he's just better at it than Pascal Siakam, if those are his three-point shooting percentages? And more pertinent than that, how much do we want to pay that guy $45 million a year for the next 5 years or whatever it ends up being? It's, that's an interesting question. I think Pascal's really good. Fit-wise, it's just interesting. He's been linked to Atlanta in the past, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Boy, oh boy, Bobby. I'm going to lose my bet to Tim Bontemps. The Hawks are 9-9. Just okay. Just okay. Yeah. Every night they're okay.
They're like, they're, you know, they're a team that, you know, tries to outscore you. I mean, they did it in the Brooklyn game. They did it last Thursday night against San, I mean, they're down in San Antonio. They're losing. And then, yeah, they put up 137 points again, give up 135.
Yeah, they're just playing like, it's like just, it's not fake basketball. It's just like, yeah, what are we doing here? Like, just like every game is just going to be 139, 135. Hooray for us. We all know as we watch the team, and they must know internally, like, this is not a model that is like actually going anywhere. And I bring them up only because they've been linked to Siakam. Back to Toronto for a second. I like when they use Scotty in the pick and roll as both ball handler, which he only does about 11 times for 100 possessions, and as a screener when Achiuwa is the center and can space the floor. I like that look for them. I'd like to lean into that a little bit more, but that's just an aside. I bring up Atlanta only because, you know, they traded a lot for DeJounte Murray.
And it hasn't, it hasn't come yet. It's coming.
Jalen Johnson's hurt, and he adds a needed element of defense and just a different, like, Bay and Hunter are just so similar in what they do off the ball that I like the sort of wildness that Jalen Johnson brings. But they've got to be looking at this team and be like, man, we traded all this stuff for DeJounte Murray. He's been fine. Changed our coach. Quinn Snyder's as good of a coach, a regular season coach, as there is in the league. Good of a coach, period, as there is in the league almost. And it's like, we just keep running into this wall. This is based on no reporting at all. None. No hard reporting. I have no hard information on this, just to be clear. Doesn't it just feel like they're going to reach a crossroads, if not this year, then pretty soon, where it's like, if this is all we are, like, what are we doing here? What are we doing? What does that mean for Trae Young? And who would even trade for Trae Young? Like, I'm sitting here listing teams that are Trae Young theoretical trade possibilities, and it's like, Orlando's now too good. Orlando liked Trae Young in the draft. They've had a hole at lead guard for what? No, we're too good. We're not messing with that. Washington's too far away. Detroit, I mean, whatever. Like I just said, I'm not trading young guys for just a Band-Aid now. Like a sad for sad trade with the Bulls, what good does that do anybody? Anyway, that's just the Hawks aside. On the Raptors, I don't know, take it wherever you want. Raptors, Hawks, I don't know. What the hell?
Well, yeah, I mean, Atlanta wasn't one of my teams, but I mean, there are questions like, listen, like, eventually you probably have to, I mean, you signed Murray to an extension. His restriction gets lifted on January 9th. Like, is it too short of a body of work to figure out, does both those guys work together? I mean, like, that's for me, if I'm going to continually go down this path of being a 500 team, does the backcourt work? Right. Like, maybe that's something you talk about in the offseason, maybe not right now, but like for Atlanta, like, we've heard about DeAndre Hunter. They're going to be a tax team next year, likely, right? Like, so do they start doing some of their work now? If the goal is to re-sign Sadiq Bey, who is a restricted free agent, and Jalen Johnson.
Why is that the goal? That's like, I watch these names, I'm like, what? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, so, and as you said, they've got a pick coming their way from SAC. That's protected, likely conveyed if the Kings are in the playoffs here. But you owe unprotected. You owe a pick swap to San Antonio here, and they're just kind of like one of these, you know, one of these 9-9 teams that are just. I feel like when we look up in the standings, it's going to be 40-42 in April.
SAC, by the way, I've talked about before, is a very good candidate to make a win now trade. We don't need to talk about them. Philly, yeah. I've talked to death about win now trades. But yeah, I don't know what the Hawks are going to do. I don't know what the Raptors are going to do. Time will tell, but those players have value. Ananobi especially has, I mean, Ananobi fits anywhere. I've talked about Ananobi as a win now player for Oklahoma City if they decide to go a little bit more in this season. Philly, everybody could use, Sacramento, everybody could use Ananobi. I don't think the return is going to be crazy if they trade Ananobi, but a couple of first round picks, maybe, you know, a third good asset and something else. We'll see. Do you want to pick another team?
Yeah. I mean, I have two. So let me think here.
Just mention them both and we'll see.
Yeah. In New Orleans and Orlando.
Okay.
Those are because. Let's start with New Orleans here.
Yeah, we're doing New Orleans. New Orleans, I said this yesterday on TV.
Yeah.
They are the most interesting team in the Western Conference right now. They are 10-9, which I think is great work considering their whole roster has been injured. And now, of course, Larry Nance Jr. has been injured again.
Yeah.
Zion's starting to look like Zion again in terms of his explosion and finishing at the basket, which is to say there's just nothing you can do other than hope that he is so bad on defense and getting any, he just doesn't get any defensive rebounds. It's like astounding that you win the game there. CJ's back. Trey Murphy the third is coming back. Here's their wing rotation right now. If everyone's healthy, these are the wings that are in the rotation: Trey Murphy, Herb Jones, Brandon Ingram, CJ McCollum, Dyson Daniels, and Jordan Hawkins, who is freaking good. That dude is a gunner, and he and Zion have a good pick and roll game going with Zion, point Zion as the ball handler. That's a deep wing rotation that may re-unlock for the first time in a while a little bit of Zion at center as an option. JV's been really good. They've got picks to trade. I'm not saying they're like a threat to win the conference. I'm saying here's what they are. They're a threat to get into the top six with a really deep and tough to play team that you might be pretty much anybody but Denver and look up and be like, we're down 2-1 in the first round, and we're like, we can't do anything with these guys right now.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of different directions here. Like, I'll just start with like the financial angle, and then I'm going to go into their roster here. But like, all right, are they willing to pay the tax for the first time in franchise history? All right, like that's going to be, and I think you are. If what you have out there, and if you continue to play, like they're a little bit over the luxury tax, but they'd have to move like Kira Lewis to get under. So like, what is that something, if they don't do anything, is that something they maybe think about when we get closer to February? My problem with New Orleans is, and you said, like, they are sitting on a boatload of picks, right? They still have things coming their way. They've got draft. They've got all their own first. They've got this Laker pick that they can defer to 2025. It's unprotected in 24. They've got, I'm pulling it up right here. You know, they've got a top four pick that comes their way from Milwaukee in 25 that if it's conveyed, they've got swaps. They got a lot of things here. Who's the odd man out? Who do you, who, you know, who do you, who, if something comes, is it, is it Larry Nance in the couple of years he has left? Is him and Lewis, can that package with picks? Like, as you said, like, this is a deep team. You know, you're not, you know, you're top heavy in salary with McCollum, Ingram, Zion, three guys making over $100 million. And then you have a lot of those, you have Herb Jones, you mentioned Hawkins, Najee Marshall is going to be a free agent, JV's going to be a free agent, he's played well, Dyson Daniels, like the list goes on there. It's like, I don't want to give up any of these guys.
Well, JV has been so good. And defensively, he's been better, I think, than they even anticipated. He's not great. We know what he is defensively. He's been good at it. Offensively, he's been shooting it well enough. He's a beast in the post. He's been so good that kind of like the Clippers' last frontier was, can they upgrade from Zubats at center? Well, Zubats has been really good lately. I'm not sure they need to as much anymore. Valanciunas, same thing. Like, we've fantasized about this like Miles Turner, whatever, trade for New Orleans for years and years. And those teams have talked a lot and not gotten anywhere. I don't think they've talked recently, to be clear. I think JV is pretty good. Like, I don't know what they should do, but I just know they are perpetually on the verge of being really good. And I think they're back to being on the verge of being really good.
No, I agree. I mean, they've kept their head above water. I mean, they're one game above 500 with some, you know, with the CJ injury here. You know, they get him back, you know, shooting. I mean, Herb Jones has been really good. You mentioned Jordan Hawkins has been good. Zion's been, you know, good of late here. I think if they can just stay healthy, I think they're deep enough.
Daniels has been good, and that starting five with Daniels in CJ's place was very, very good. I think they're going to have some interesting conversations about who starts and finishes games, because if Trey Murphy III is as good as I think he's going to be and as good as they think he's going to be, he's just going to have to do both of those things, and someone else is going to be not doing either or one of those things. I don't want to talk about Orlando. What do you have anything like super new and interesting to say about Orlando? Who's the best story in the entire NBA? I have Cole Anthony coming on after you.
What are they, third defensively? I think if anything, like, where do they see where they are? They two steps ahead of this rebuild, retool, like we all, I always thought this could be a potentially a play-in team here. Who knows how this rest, I mean, we're only 18 games in here. Like, are they at a point you get to February 8th, we're sitting in the four hole. Let's, for example, do we start moving things around? You've got some expirings here. When the Fultz has been out, Wendell Carter's been out, they played really, as we know, they're on this winning streak here. They've got their own picks. They've got a Denver pick, you know, from the Aaron Gordon trade. Are you just content to ride it out and see where your young players are?
If I'm them, I've never been more content since like Shaq and Penny were there, basically. there are two other things I want to hit before we go. Number one, we never answered my own question, which is, who's the other player? Like, besides the Bulls guys and the Raptors guys, is there any? Because every team is trying to win except the real dregs. And the dregs, like, we can sit here and talk about Bogdanovich and a guy like Kuzma, who's interesting. And, you know, one of the dregs right now is Memphis. I don't think they will pivot into sort of like any, I think if anything, they'll try to salvage their season.
Well, you know, I had them down here, and I just want to really, like, Memphis for me is interesting because although they are in the, you know, bottom of the standings, you know, even with Ja when he comes back, you know, they're not going to be even a play-in team here. Like, do they become buyers
at
the deadline?
They're only 3 games out of the play-in in the loss column, Bobby.
I know. Is that 4-14?
4-13.
Are they buyers at the deadline, almost doing like their free agent shopping, like, as I always say, like 4 months early, right? Like, you kind of take a big picture approach there with Memphis.
You know, Portland, maybe the answer is just Jeremy Grant, who we don't talk about as much because he's just not that sexy player.
I wrote down on my notes, because you were like, let's talk about on the court too. But like, Portland, the last four games, I know they had the meltdown in Milwaukee.
They're getting frisky. Man. Getting frisky.
And three of four, winner, Indiana, Cleveland, back-to-back. Jeremy Grant, last four games, 25 points, 54 from the field, 66-7 from three. Woo, Shaedon Sharpe. I mean, they are, you know, you get Brogdon, who allows you to kind of take your time with Scoot, who's back from that injury here. They are interesting.
When they have Brogdon, Ayton, and Grant on the floor. And they're getting great bench minutes from like Jabari Walker and Jopp Reith and guys that people have not heard of at all.
Yeah.
But when they have those three on the floor and Sharp has a good game, and Sharp's been up and down. He's had some turnover issues lately. He had a great game last night. I'm very bullish on Sharp. They're like a competent team. Maybe Grant's the guy. Can I tell you the guy that I've been asked about a lot?
Sure.
And you've probably been asked about a lot too.
Yeah.
And it, let me be very clear. This is just other executives from other teams asking questions. It's not reporting. It's not anyone's made a call. No calls that I know have been made. And this team is certainly not taking any calls that I've, or making any. The phones don't work in Utah. But a guy that I've been asked about a lot is, what are the Jazz going to do with Lauri Markkanen?
Yeah.
And I've been surprised just because I'm like, Lauri Markkanen is really good. They got him in a trade that was a great return for them. He's really good. I would assume nothing, and they're just thrilled to keep him. But the reason people are asking is like, you know, the Jazz are 6-13, have not been good this year. Their guards are turning the ball over left and right. They don't appear to have like a tentpole superstar on their team as good as Markkanen, and he's in the middle of his career now, and he's an all-star. I don't think he's more than that, which is, by the way, fine. God, I'd love to be an NBA All-Star. You're like one of the best of the best of the best of the best ever. Kessler, after a slow start, has started to play well. I think opponents are shooting like 40% at the rim against him. He looks more like the player he was last season offensively too. He's a big part of their team. He's a foundational player, not a superstar because he's not doing enough offensively. And so I think people are asking the question, was maybe their vehicle to get one kind of taking a bigger step back this season, next season when Cooper Flags in the draft, whatever. I just think it's interesting how many people are throwing that name at me. Have you, because he fits anywhere because of his shooting and size. Have you thought about him at all?
Yeah, I have. Just because of where this season is going. I mean, when I talked to teams in July, and this was after Sabonis did his renegotiation extension, they said, you know, this team said, hey, that's gonna be the next guy, right? Like maybe not at that number because he didn't sign an extension. His number is so low that he probably won't. Utah has cap space next year. Do you renegotiate and extend Markkanen? Right. Like that was kind of be the next guy here. But I have heard, you know, just, you know, talking to teams, people ask, hey, he's out right now. I think he got a strained hamstring. Does he become that guy? Because as you said, like Utah is like, you know, they had the two wins against New Orleans at home, and then they go into Memphis and get their doors blown out. And I like Keontae George. I mean, but there's like, it's like, you know, they've been spraying the ball all around. I think they're tops in turnovers, points off turnovers allowed. Clarkson's, has been fine. Oche's been okay. Like kind of okay.
Agbaji's just been okay. And he's been like, sometimes he starts and sometimes he plays like 8 minutes.
Yeah. I thought they would have been a little, but maybe we got spoiled from them last year. I mean, maybe that's what happened. Maybe the rebuild or retool was, you know, started too quick here and their good start last year. This is kind of, you know, who they are.
Well, they traded, you know, the only experienced and traditional-ish point guard on the team, and Mike Conley, halfway through last season and are suffering the results. The other team I just want to talk about, just want to mention them, because all's been quiet after a lot of noise all summer, after a little bit of noise when the Zach LaVine thing broke. All has been quiet in Miami, where the Heat are 11-8, despite Jimmy Butler missing a game here and there, despite Tyler Hero missing a whole bunch of games lately. He started off great. And despite their backup center situation becoming a little bit of an uncertainty, Kevin Love is now doing that job and doing it well. Duncan Robinson is playing sensationally well. Jaime Jaquez Jr.
Woo.
I saw Simmons tweet something about like this last night. It's almost annoying what a perfect Heat player he is. Oh, there's another backdoor cut for a team that really subsists on cuts. He can post up smaller guys. He gang rebounds. He runs the floor. He throws outlet passes. It's just, he's so Heat that it's annoying, but he's very, very good. Caleb Martin's back. They said all along.
And Kyle Lowry's played pretty decent.
So they said all along, like, if we don't get Dame, we're going to be a little sad because, you know, it's Damian Lillard. We like our team. We think we're deep. Yeah, we lost Strus. we think we're deep in quality. Josh Richardson has been solid for them. You know, they're just going to have to come to an idea of, is our upside as high as it was last year? Like, can we actually do what we did last year in the playoffs with this sort of Jimmy and Bam and a lot of quality depth, more quality depth than a lot of people thought they had? I'm not sure the answer to what the answer to that question is. We'll learn more when Hero gets back. But they're a good, solid team. And they are winning more and more than, like, they got off to. I think they were 1-4. So do the math. They're 10-4 since then. It's all been quiet there. And honestly, like, you know, in terms of LaVine, I said I would be blown away if they traded Hero for LaVine. I think Hero's just about as good as LaVine and on a much better contract. If you're talking about Lowry and Robinson and a pick or two, maybe that gets you in the conversation. But like, those guys are playing really well. LaVine's contract is kind of onerous. And like, you got to stop throwing Jaquez into these deals as like an add-on and Caleb Martin. No. Like, those guys are good. Like, it's all kind of quiet there. I got my eye on them. I'm like, maybe they're just going to do nothing and we're going to wake up and be like, oh, they're up 3-0 against the Bucks again.
Yeah. I mean, like that, like, I, you know, like, some, I mean, it's not one of the teams, you know, that we were going to talk about, but I have, you know, there were questions here and it's like, you know, I mean, Lowry's on an expiring contract, you know. You can just play out the season here. I think if you were not, and as I said, he's played pretty decent. You can just, you know, what's your comfort level taking money into next year? Like, that's the whole big question too. Maybe you just let it expire off your books.
And how about this? Even if they just stay as they are right now, where they're just tough as shit and they have two all-star level players and some uncertainty around that. And they would say, well, what about Tyler Hero? We think he's an all-star player. Okay, fine. You look up at the standings right now in the East, and just if you just ask Eric Spoelstra and ask Pat Riley and ask Bam Adebayo and ask Jimmy Butler, look above you in the standings. Who are you scared of? New York? No, we just beat them in the playoffs. Philadelphia? Yeah, they're awesome. Are we scared of them? I'm scared of Philly. They're not scared of Philly. Like, maybe they should. I'm not saying they shouldn't be, but they're not. Milwaukee? Their eyes light up when they see Milwaukee revamped with Dame or not. Again, I'm not saying I'd pick Miami to win that series. I'm just saying they're not scared. Orlando, apologies, not scared. Boston, appropriate fear.
Yeah.
And maybe you can look below them and be like, Cleveland's a problem and I don't know, whatever. But like, I'm just saying the Heat are looking around. Maxey and Embiid, that's a cool story. If they upgrade their team at the deadline, that's a different story. They're not scared of those guys. Like, who are the Heat? The Heat aren't scared, period. But like, they're looking around and be like, We seem to play Milwaukee pretty well. Don't know what to tell you guys. Just saying.
No, I mean, and it's all been, you know, and as you mentioned, it's all been without Hero. You know, he comes back. He kind of gives you a different element here where you don't have to do anything at all. You can kind of keep the pattern, you know, with your picks for something else down the road here. But they've done a nice job just plugging guys. The Jaquez pick has been, you know, he was one of those, he was like, it was like Christian Brown from a year ago. Guys, teams that are winning teams that go out and get guys that have been in college 3 or 4 years. Like, that's, you know, who can come in and play right now.
There's not a moment in a Heat game, really, even when like Orlando Robinson is in the game or something, where you're like, oof, it's not great that one guy's on the floor. Like, they just have good players all over the place.
And
like,
they, you know, and they've gotten good minutes from Josh Richardson, who I thought was kind of like, you know, based off in New Orleans and in San Antonio, like on a minimum contract. I mean, they've gotten really good minutes from him also.
Hashtag Heat culture, baby. Anyway, all right, Bobby Marks. So we got an article coming out in a couple of weeks just about this kind of landscape.
Yeah, so we've got a couple of things. Well, I think around the 13th, we've got, you know, all the guys who can and can't be traded, because that's the December 15th. And then we've got a big thing that I think I'm in the ends right now. We've got all front office discussion questions for every team, probably like 8 or 9 questions per team, guys who are off the board. Oh, yeah, I know. Players with trade value expire. I gotta look at everything. Yeah, so we're about 10,000 words in, and we're plugging away on that, baby.
Bobby Marks, nobody does it better. I will see you soon over the holidays, and continue the great work. And I look forward to catching up.
Thanks, Zach.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's there up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, watch out for them, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
The Low Post fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite The Low Post episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like First Take and Pardon the Interruption ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free, or go to Amazon.com/low. That's Amazon.com/low to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right. Look, all this talk about Lakers, Clippers, Celtics, Sixers, big markets, big stars. Nah. The biggest story in the NBA so far, the 13-5 Orlando Magic, who are number one or number two in defense, talking trash. Jalen Suggs is up there on getting the crowd involved like a WWE wrestler. They're producing LeBron, Dwayne Wade, mimic highlights on dunks and blowing people out of the gym. This team is for real. They're not going anywhere. And I'm excited to welcome in a Sixth Man of the Year candidate, a dunk contest participant who I had forgotten dunked in Timberland boots in the dunk contest, someone whose father wore maybe the most infamous shirt in NBA history in an all-time great brawl, and someone who was with the Orlando Magic when it wasn't quite this fun. Cole Anthony, how are you, sir?
Hey, what's going on, man? I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. This is fun. This is sports. It's supposed to be fun. There's nobody having more fun than you guys. You guys look like you're having fun. Is it as fun as it looks?
It's probably more fun than it looks. I was actually talking with Jalen Suggs today. We were just talking about how fun this is, like how just like how winning can just, you know, just make a lot of things better just in your life, just whatever it is. It's just, there's nothing like winning in the NBA. And granted, this is only a small example of it, but man, it feels good. And I know we want to keep doing this.
We're recording this on, what is this, Thursday afternoon. Last night, I did not see your game last night. I've seen a bunch of your recent games. I skipped the one last night. And then I wake up, and I'm watching the highlights, and they're like, oh, they just did the Dwayne Wade LeBron lob complete with, like, the pose. And I'm like, what happened? So, like when that happened, you finish the lob. You dunk it. I don't know, sir. If you can see Jalen doing the Wade arms out pose. Did you know immediately, like, I think we just did that same thing, and have you talked about it today now that it's kind of become a thing?
Yo, I had no idea when he did it. Like, he threw the lob. And me and him, they had a few lobs we connected on in the past couple of years. And so I just kind of just think he just threw me another regular lob. And then I get to the locker room after the game and I see that. And I'm like, whoa, this is kind of different. Like, I like this. This is hard. And we were talking about today too, when we was at the gym. And I don't probably watch that video at least 50, 60 times. Like, that joint, it was dope. The crowd was into it. Jalen was being Jalen. He was out there looking like like something was a little wrong with him, you know what I'm saying? But he just, that joint was so, so dope. I got the picture actually. He was going to post on Instagram in a little bit.
Did you, be honest, you were a teenager, and even I think younger than a teenager maybe, when the LeBron Heatles thing started happening and that clip happened. Did you, as a basketball fan, did you like that team, or were they like a villainous team to you when they all came together, LeBron, Wade, and Bosh?
Nah, for me, honestly, like for me, growing up, my favorite team was that OKC team. And so it, a little bit, yeah. I mean, I always had like a lot. LeBron's probably my favorite player of all time. But that, I remember that finals. I think it might have been in 2010, 2011 when OKC made it to the finals and played them. I remember going to one of those games because my dad was actually doing the game. And I remember just I had an OKC jacket on, which I was rocking. I really wanted OKC to win. It just didn't happen. But now I wouldn't say that was a villain for me, but I think I was 10 years old when that actual clip came out.
So that finals is 2011-2012. So you probably remember Kevin Durant baseline jumper game two in Oklahoma City. Thinks he got fouled. The Thunder will tell you to this day he got fouled. I think they were down by one or down by two. You probably remember that exact shot.
Mm-hmm. I remember. Sure.
Now, I definitely remember. Let me ask you about the Magic. I was like lukewarm on you guys this season. I didn't think anything like this was going to happen. And you got to sustain it, right? Like that's the thing. People are going to come for you now. But I'm wondering, as someone who's now been there a while, it's your fourth season there. Was there something in camp or over the summer, a practice, a workout, even a game early in the season or in preseason, where you thought to yourself, or you even talked with your teammates, like, oh, like we might have something this year?
Man, we've been talking about this since the season ended last year. I feel like I think it started honestly last season for us. Like, yeah, we had the rough start, started 5-20. All of a sudden, dudes get back healthy, we start rolling. And, like, I think we finished that after that 5-20 start, we were over 500 for the rest of the year. And in our heads, we're like, yo, why would we not be able to replicate this at a minimum next season? And so for us, we all, like, as a unit, all just had this same mentality that, you know, yo, there's no one better than us in the league. We can go out there and we can dominate teams. We can be one of the best teams in the league. And we've just, as a unit, just maintain this mentality. And it's honestly, it's all started with Coach Mose. He was the first one to tell us that, yo, we're gonna be the best defensive team in the league. And we got a chance to be really good because this group is special.
Best defensive team in the league. Now, what is this? So you got people look at your team. Certain teams, you know, they're going to be good defensive teams, right? Like you get a big rim protecting center. You got a bunch of switchable wings. Like that looks like a great defensive team. You guys defended well last year. Mose has leaned into that identity, but you don't look at the Magic necessarily and think they have incredible defensive personnel. You got some big guards, right? You got big wings in Franz and Paolo, and Paolo's a power forward, but they're younger, right? Centers, you know, not exactly guys that have lit the world on fire in the NBA. Why are you such a good defensive team? What's actually, like, schematically, what makes you guys so good?
I think it's just all of our mentality. It's like, all right, like, we all are in the mindset of, like, all right, I'm not going to let this man score me. And it's one of those situations where we all have each other's back at the same time. Like, oh, my man gets beat right here. All right, it's cool. I got your back. Don't even worry about that, Junior. It's just been that group mentality. And it started in training camp. Like, when I tell you our training camp, our offense was so rough. We would play these games where we're barely scoring and we're causing we're just getting stop. Both units, it would be the starting unit and the second unit. All the way down, actually, we had a third unit. We called them the Green Goblins because they would wear our green jerseys. But we would just be getting stops after stops after stops. And we do have some really great high level, what I think could eventually be defensive player of the year candidates, first team all defense guys, and Jonathan Isaac and Jalen Suggs. And, you know, I think for me personally, I watched Jalen in that starting unit, and the way he has so much energy and he just guards, and that always just amps me up. And so I'm like, all right, I got your back. Let me go try to guard like you, Jalen. Now, I'm not saying I'm the defender he is, but just, you know, it's been contagious. It's just this defensive mindset that Moses instilled in us has just been really contagious.
Any scuffles or confrontations in those practices? Because probably when you're going 5-on-5 and keeping score, like it happens.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely didn't have a few. Not actually, no, and it never got to know so fists being thrown or anything. But like, we didn't got into some verbal arguments, man. I know in preseason training camp, I think I got into it with Mose one time. It was so competitive. This is probably the most talented team I've ever been a part of, but forget the time. We just end up just guarding 5-10 dudes on the floor, just giving it their all in every possession, just on the defensive end. It was really fun to be a part of. Frustrating too, but also very fun.
What'd you get into it with the coach about?
Man, nothing actually crazy. I didn't actually get into it with him, but like, I think we was doing like a game, and our second unit, we're killing the first unit. We're killing them. And I ended up it was like a missed call or something. And I just started talking mess to one of the coaches who's going to be in the refs. I started talking mess to Moles. It was nothing personal, but it's just like, man, we was just so amped up.
Now, you have on your team Joe Ingles, who's one of the greatest talkers in the recent history of the NBA.
He
talks me. Just like inside baseball, he once saw me on TV and texted a photo, and I thought this would be nice. Joe Ingles saw me on TV, and it's a photo of him flipping the bird at me on the television. You have Mo Wagner, who is just a walking physical encounter. Just people are falling over. He's hitting people. And you guys are kind of playing to the crowd a lot. Have you guys had so far like a veteran team or anybody kind of talk back at you like, or say like, oh, okay, you guys, like, we're coming now. We see how you guys are. We're coming for you. Or like, you guys are getting too big for your britches or whatever. Have you had any of that pushback?
Not really. Not yet. I anticipate that teams will start trying to do this to us, but we ain't going for none of that. We're a tough group, and we do got some tools. I'm with you. Joe Ingles is the best talker in the NBA. I'm with you on that for sure. He came in from day one and started talking shit. and me and him talk to each other sometimes too, being in the same lineup on the court at the same time. But I'm sure it will happen, but just we don't feed into that. We just go hoop.
Now, if I know Joe, he immediately identifies something about every player that on the team that he's going to pick at, like whether it's fashion, hair, habit.
He go on my hairline.
No, I've been told to ask you about the hair, and you can blame somebody with the magic for this question. Said he cares a lot about the hair because. Well, I'm interested to see if you can answer the question. Why do you think this person told me Cole is very proud of his long hair and is growing it out now?
I don't know. What did they say?
They said he looks at his dad and he's worried that's going to happen to him.
Hey, I told my pops. I said, that generation of baldness in the Anthony family is going to end with you. We ain't doing that on this side. That's what I told him. I was like, nah. This is not going to be a generational thing. We just going to end it with your generation, my generation and on. We're going to have luscious locks.
I like it. Have you ever seen the video of him with the shirt? I assume you have in the Suns Knicks brawl. Have you, is the shirt exist? I mean, for people who don't know, there's an epic Phoenix, New York brawl in like 1993 in Phoenix between Kevin Johnson and Doc Rivers. And the most infamous part of it is Greg Anthony, who's not playing in the game, running onto the court in street clothes, wearing what I would say is an objectively ridiculous button-down shirt that gets torn during the brawl. Does the shirt exist? Have you seen it, and have you made fun of him for it?
I have not seen the shirt. I've seen the brawl, for sure. And I think he might have told me it might have been Dior or something. I don't know if they had Dior back then. But he said it was designer. He said it was a nice shirt, which is surprising because he can't dress nowadays. But... I think that shirt is long gone, especially after it got ripped. He probably threw that joint in the trash, knowing him.
It should be in Springfield. That's where it should be. So you guys talked about how you were 500 the last 52, 53 games of last season and how that set the stage for this year. Well, you're not 500 now. You're 13-5. You're way over 500. How have the goals of your team changed? And do you talk about like, hey, we might be able to accomplish X, Y, and Z? Like at beginning of the season, it was like 500 playoffs, play-in. What is it now?
I mean, for us, the thing that Mo said this to us, I think, after we won our first couple games or something like that, and these are words I've just been repeating to the team ever since then. He told us, be greedy. And so for me, it's just that's I've been saying that to the team. I say it before every game. I say it at halftime every game. I keep telling – I say it during practice. I tell everyone, yo, let's keep being greedy. Let's not be satisfied with – let's not put no limit on what we can do. Let's not be satisfied with, oh, we got 8 wins in a row. Let's end it right here. Cool, no. It's been – I don't want to even just set any limits on this team because I don't think there's no telling how good we can be. I think that's another thing is that we've continued to get better. Even in this 8-game span, we've gotten better. Our offense has gotten better. We've had players on the team get better. I've gotten better. I mean, it's just – I don't want to limit us. So, I mean, it's just – it's been fun, man.
Have you guys talked about how, in terms of not placing ceilings, you know, the number one team in the East is Boston. They go deep in the playoffs every year. and you guys just beat the crap out of Boston every time you play them. Is there a reason for that? Have you talked about
Eddie House?
Explain.
Eddie House. He was talking about us early last season when we played them twice in Boston, and he called us a trash team pretty much. And we all, like, to this day, we take that personal. We didn't watch the clips as a team. We always gonna remember what he said about us. So it is personal every single time we play Boston. And Boston's a great team. Boston's a great team. But it will continue to be personal. And we still I can't say what I really want to say. But yes.
Oh yes, you can. You can absolutely say what you really want to say.
Nah, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay.
All right, but in the grind of the regular season, and I'm watching all 30 teams, all the games kind of blend together, and I'm sure they do for players too. But do you stamp those games? Like, when you face an elite team like that and you seem to have their number or at least play well against them, does that mean more to you, or do those games kind of stick in your mind of like, okay, like we can go toe to toe with X. I mean, you beat Denver already as well.
Yeah, I think for us, I mean, I don't, for me personally, I know that I try to, especially in the NBA, the one thing I never do is take winning for granted. I'll never take that for granted, especially after my past 3 years here. Like, I will never take that for granted. So for me, I try to take every game seriously. And that's why I continue to tell people on the team to continue to be greedy and continue to stay paranoid. And so I wouldn't say it's any one specific team that we're like, all right, we got to beat this team. I think it's how we feel about every single team. It's just that every game is personal.
You might be the sixth man of your favorite right now. It's a little early. 16 points a game, shooting the hell out of it, defending really hard. Always, you know, closing tons of games as in the backcourt. You started full time essentially your first 2 years in the league. Was the transition to coming off the bench difficult for you? How did those conversations with Mo's go? And like, when did you get to the stage of like, oh, I'm gonna just embrace this and make it mine?
It probably took me about till halfway through the year last year to really embrace that role. I mean, I kind of in my head, I'm like, all right, man, I'm a starter. So I know I'm good enough to be a starter. But it just kind of came to me just like, all right, like, I got to throw my ego away. Me and Moles didn't really even have a real conversation about it until probably after last season where I told I'm like, Moles, like, yo, like my fault, like, I didn't fully embrace that role from day one, but I'm here now to fully embrace that. I want this team. I want to maximize our potential with this team. So whatever you need me to do, whether that's come off the bench, start, whatever it is, I'm here to do.
You guys are a young team, very young team. I want to go inside the team plane. You're flying from Miami to Boston or across the country. You got a long flight. Who sits, like, what's the layout of the plane? Who sits with who? What are you doing on the plane? Who's the life of the party on the plane? Is there a card game? Like, take me inside a group of 25 and unders living it up in the NBA.
Yeah, so they'll do some card games sometimes. I've never played any of the card games, but I'll be sitting there watching. Let's see. Me and Joe Ingles sit next to each other. And then in front of us is Paolo and Anthony Black. To the right of us is that's where we got a little table. Before, that's Admiral Scoville, Kevon Harris, Markelle Fultz, Wendell Carter. And it depends on the day. Because sometimes I might have a lot of energy. I might be up there talking. We play music sometimes. It's really a collective group where we all kind of bring the energy. I'd probably say, actually, though, most of the time it's Markelle, Admiral, and Wendell.
Those are – they're driving. They're making the plane fun.
We call them the Jank Squad. They all janky.
What squad?
The Jank Squad, because they're all janky. So
okay.
They act very janky, very in character for them.
Who's the most feared card shark on the team?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't pay attention that much, to be honest.
Okay.
I don't. No idea.
I have heard that there might be. Remember Bobby and Toby, Boban Marjanovic and Tobias Harris, how they became like an NBA odd couple?
Yeah.
I have heard there's a budding Bobby and Toby situation with you and Goga Batadze, that there's a little bit of a bromance there, a little bit of an NBA odd couple romance. Is this true? And what is the common ground between you and Goga?
Hey, Goga, probably one of my best friends on the team, man. That dude, he's hilarious. I don't know what it is, but we just get along. Like, that's really my dog. Like, I don't know why. I can't tell you why. Boy, ugly. But me just, we just, hey, I just rock with Goga, man. We really got cool because we're part of the same agency. And one of my cats from the agency told me, like, when we first got there, like, yo, like, look out for him. And I'm like, all right, I put my arm around him, be a big brother figure to him, show him the ropes, show him around Orlando. And he just, I think from day one, he was just talking to me. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, we're going to get along just fine.
I heard anime or Pokemon is a subject of commonality. Anime.
It's anime for sure. No one else really rocks the Pokemon. But actually, young fella Anthony Black does, but that's a me thing.
I got to be honest with you. I got nothing to bring to the table on those. I have an 8-year-old daughter and I still don't really understand what Pokemon is. They fight each other. Fight? That's all it is? A bunch of creatures who fight?
You catch them all. Yeah. You know, it's fun, man. It's fun. Y'all should download Pokemon Go.
You even wear Goga's jersey sometimes during practice, right?
I have done that. Yes, I have. Yeah. He wore my jersey and I wore his jersey one day during training camp and he played like absolute. It was like, yo, I'm not wearing your jersey again to get this away from me.
So I'm going to be serious. I'm going to be serious for a second about Goga. So you're on an 8-game winning streak. Markel's hurt. Anthony Black has come into the starting five. Wendell Carter Jr. is hurt, your starting center. Goga and Mo Wagner are like the unsung heroes of your team. Like Goga, third center, waived by the Pacers, came into the league as like he's going to be a stretch center. He's going to shoot threes. That didn't really work out. On your team, thrust into the starting five and is just getting every offensive rebound, protecting the rim, going instead of a stretch five, he's like a traditional kind of bruising interior center. I mean, and Mo Wagner, he might be the best backup center in the league right now. As a guard who works with both of them, like it must be kind of cool to see these guys who are not forgotten parts of your team, but certainly not at the top of the scouting report in the preseason report. Like those guys have been absolutely massive in everything that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's dope. Like those two in particular, it's really dope kind of just to see them both succeed because I get along great with both of them, but like I see how hard both those dudes work. Like I see the work they put in on a daily basis, extra hours in the gym, late at night, early mornings, and it's just like you root for dudes like that. And also I like them as human beings. That makes me want them to succeed even more. But they work so hard, man. It's just it's about time they got a little credit, got a little love, and I'm super, super happy for them, man. Mo Wagner's a 6-man-of-the-year candidate. So I'll be telling them that. So.
Oh, that's right. Both of you could be. Although that goes, you know, speaking of Joe Ingles, there was a year where Joe Ingles and Jordan Clarkson in Utah, I think both were finished in the top three and 6-man-of-the-year. Jordan Clarkson won. And there was a big debate. Like, can two guys on the same team be in consideration for 6-man-of-the-year? Doesn't one of them have to be the 7th man? And when someone said that to me, I was like, boy, that's deep. I never thought of it that way. They're both coming off the bench and playing well. He's been unbelievable. And I'll tell you this. You watch. So when you guys are shooting free throws and he's in the game, so you're on offense shooting. So he doesn't have inside position, right? Most offensive big men in that situation, they're kind of like, I'm just going to get back on defense and I'm not really going to chase this offensive rebound. Mo Wagner, it must be so irritating for every other big man in the league. Like, I got to box this dude out on free throw rebound. He's like knocking guys over. You're laughing. Do you guys notice this?
Yeah. I mean, we got a few guys like that though. Like, it's not just him. It's not just him, but like he is. Yeah. Mo is just, he's crafty. He's smart. He works hard. He plays incredibly hard. So it's like, I love to see it. I really do.
I'm going to read you a couple of old quotes from your high school days when you were a New York City high school legend before you went to Oak Hill. Oak Hill, right? You've transferred to Oak Hill senior year.
Yep.
And you were not shy on confidence as a high school player, nor should you have been. You were recruited everywhere. This is you, and I want to see how you feel like this. If you feel like just how you feel hearing this again. I see dudes like Trae Young and Steph Curry. I know I can shoot as good as them, if not better.
I believe that.
I love it.
Nothing's changed. I'm a little more realistic nowadays. But shoot, I can get my percentages up. My percentages are pretty solid right now.
They're very solid. I'm just saying, Steph Curry. You didn't drop Trae Young and another pretty good shooting guard. Like I'll just throw Steph Curry's name into the conversation. Now I'm going to read what an NBA scout, Anonymous, and as regular listeners of this podcast know, Anonymous NBA scout is one of my pet peeves in journalism. It shouldn't be allowed. You shouldn't just be allowed to anonymously trash players because you're an NBA scout. But here's what an anonymous NBA scout said about you when you were at North Carolina. Quote, he needs to learn to manifest his competitiveness in a more constructive manner. He can be overly demonstrative, especially when his teammates make mistakes. His attitude tends to be the biggest hesitation teams have. What did you think hearing that stuff then? And what do you think of it now when I think your bravado, so to speak, is one of your biggest kind of assets as a player?
Man, I don't know. I heard, honestly, in going into my draft, I heard so much stuff about this. Like, oh, man, he's not coachable. He's got such a bad attitude, stuff like this. And I'm just like, I'm like, yeah, that's not me. Like, I want to be coached. Like, I don't feel like I have a negative attitude. Like, if I'm getting mad, it's the person I'm going to get mad at the most is myself. I always try to just control what I can control and always find ways to self-improve before I would ever point a finger at another person. That's just how I was raised. And so it just, it's funny to look back on stuff like that. I'll tell you that.
It's like, I don't follow high school, college ball much at all because I'm just all in on the NBA. When I read stuff like that, I was like, that kind of surprises me. He doesn't play like that. Demonstrative, sure, but like lots of guys are demonstrative. He doesn't play like selfishly or lash out at his teammates. I didn't know that, but you heard that a lot. Not coachable, even, you heard. That's a big one.
Yeah, I don't know. I've had people apologize to me for even thinking like that. Like, I know I got a story with our coach, Dale Osborne, our assistant coach. because before he came here, he's apologized to me for that. Not apologized, but he's told me the story. He said, you know, before I came, when I heard I was coming to Magic, and I'm thinking I got to deal with this New York kid, Cole Anthony, I'm thinking he's going to be a selfish, cocky, just hard to coach dude. And he's like, man, because I've never been more wrong. He's like, I apologize for you thinking like that. But it's just like, and I'm just like, man, I always feel like I'm always myself with everybody. And so I really appreciated that. But I'm just like, yo, like, I just want to know, like, where that idea came from. I'm like, yo, is it because I'm from New York? Is it because I'm loud? I don't really know.
One of the ways that one of the reasons that quotes like that surprised me is one of the first things I really noticed about your game in the pros and liked about your game in the pros was you seem for a guard, what are you, 6'1", 6'2"?
6'3" with shoes.
We'll say 6'3". You seem to really like rebounding, and you get in there amongst the bigger guys and like fly in there and bang around and get contested rebounds. Has that always been something you liked? Have you amped that up in the NBA?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I've been doing that since high school. Honestly, middle school. I used to early in middle school. I played big man, then got to high school and just always just loved rebounding. That was one of the things, like, I know that where I'm like, all right, like, I can separate myself from other guards by doing this. Rebounding is a huge part, and it's a huge part of the game. You can stop the other team from getting more possessions. And I just know for me, like, one of the things that, like, that's what Roy Williams told me when he was recruiting. He was like, I love how you rebound. You're the best rebounding guard I've ever seen. And I was like, man, I appreciate that. And so I just kept running with it. A lot of my big man teammates don't like when I steal rebounds from them, as they say. But, you know, just trying to help the team out, man.
Well, if you get the rebound, you can just take it up to court. No outlet pass necessary.
That's what I said. That's what I be trying to tell them. That's what I be trying to tell them. I'm like, yo, y'all look around. Wait, looking for me. I'm like, we already out. Run. Let's run. Let's get a bucket.
Who gets the angriest? Who really wants their rebounds?
Mo Wagner, for sure. Mo Wagner, for sure.
That's the thing I don't understand. If you average 8 rebounds versus 6, it's not changing your life. I guess
hey,
I don't
know. All I know is, if me and him are there for a rebound, I just got so much love and respect for him, man. You got the rebound. It's all you. It's all you. I really try to be conscientious of that and try to not steal his rebound specifically. Everyone
just
else
make sure good. Just make sure you don't do the thing like where two outfielders think they both have it and it hits the floor and goes out of bounds or something like that. Like, that happens every once in a while when people are overly deferential. I don't want to take up too much of your time, so I'll just open the floor to you to end it here. Well, okay, if we're good, then I was told also to ask you about food. I was told he's a very picky eater. It's Chick-fil-A or it's pizza and that's it. And that's just no way to live. We got to expand the palette. Not true.
That was my rookie year. That was my rookie year. I'm going to admit to it. That was. It's gotten a lot more diverse. I eat a lot more food. I got a chef now. You know what I'm saying? So gets me right. Gets me right.
A chef and a pet lizard?
I got two pet lizards.
What are, like, are we talking like?
They're right behind me right now, actually. I got them right back here.
Are they, your background's blurry, and don't unblur it just for the sake of the lizards. Are they like 2 feet long? Are they dangerous? What kind of lizards are we talking about?
Both about 2 feet. About 2 feet. They're not dangerous. They can't hurt you.
Do they just crawl? Like, can you just walk around the house? Are they in a tank? Where do we keep them?
Yeah, they're both in like tanks, but I let them out the house sometimes. Like with the one, I could put on my shoulder and chill it for a couple hours. And the other one's just like a fat potato, just fat and just. He can't really do much.
What do they eat?
Honestly, now mostly like fruits and vegetables, and then you know a few worms here and there.
I don't know a lot about lizards. So pet lizard is like, all right. Not a lot of people have pet lizards.
It's interesting. My parents ain't let me have no pets as kids, so I was like, all right, I'm gonna get some. Tried a dog. That didn't work out.
Why?
Just too much responsibility. Wasn't ready for that. So I'm not ready for kids.
This is the number one reason that we do not have a dog. My daughter has been agitating for a puppy for a long time now. My wife is like, no, we're not going to do it.
That's a lot of responsibility.
Like, because she correctly states, I'm going to be the one walking it at 6 a.m. when it has to go to the bathroom. You are not, and you are not. And so we will not be getting it. So this is not going to help the cause hearing this on the podcast.
Hey, I still might get another dog. But that's a story. That's a conversation for another day.
Why would you parents, your father, who was in a brawl in an NBA game and was a member of a brawling Knicks team, would not let you have a pet? What is the reasoning for this?
No, my dad actually has a dog.
Okay.
He has a dog. So my two siblings that live with him, they have a dog. And they probably get another dog soon. My mom is one who wouldn't let me get a dog.
Just because there was the responsibility. It's just too much responsibility.
Yeah, I guess, but... She was probably right, but you know, but it's all good.
I will open the floor to you to end here. What is something that the world, Orlando Magic, have not had eyes on them outside NBA crazy people like me for a long time now? What is something that you would like the world to know about your team, somebody on your team, your market, or just your expectations going forward? I will open the floor to you.
I'd probably just say that, you know, Magic is here. We're coming. We're ready. We're ready to keep taking these steps forward. We got all the pieces, and we ready to hoop. That's all I got to say.
It's been really fun to watch. You've been really fun to watch, and I appreciate taking a little time to come on the Low Post podcast. I will see you, whether it's in Orlando where the G League showcase is this year. When you guys come to New York, I'll see you. I'll say hello. But Cole Anthony, playing great. Thanks for the time.
Hey, Zach, I appreciate you, man.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.